My job is to form rigorous researchers who won't publish useless or harmful crap that will set back our field. Academia is cluttered with terrible science and mediocre scientists. I couldn't care less about how your friends perceive me, as long as their work is up to standard. If they want to drop out when told that it's not, then so be it. Not everyone has what it takes to be a scientist, and those who don't should be weeded out.
She stared at her phone, hating how unfeeling and callous he sounded. The problem was, Olive understood exactly where Greg was coming from, because she'd been in similar situations. Perhaps not with Adam, but her overall experience in STEM academia had been punctuated by self-doubt, anxiety, and a sense of inferiority. She'd barely slept the 2 weeks before her qualifying exams, often wondered if her fear of public speaking was going to prevent her from having a career, and she was constantly terrified of being the stupidest person in the room. And yet, most of her time and energy was spent trying to be the best possible scientist, trying to carve a path for herself and amount to something. The idea of someone dismissing her work and her feelings this cold-heartedly cut deep, which is why her response was so immature. It was almost fetal. Olive. Well, fuck you, Adam. She immediately regretted it, but for some reason she couldn't bring herself to send an apology. It wasn't until 20 minutes later that she realized that Adam wasn't going to reply. A warning popped up on the upper part of her screen, informing her that her battery was at 5%. With a deep sigh, Olive stood up from her bed and looked around the room in search of her charger.
No cool rate. Got it.
Malcolm's finger flicked the turn signal lever. A clicking sound filled the small car.
Going right.
No, don't listen to Jeremy. Turn left.
Jeremy leaned forward and swatted An's arm.
Malcolm, trust me. An has never been to the farm. It's on the right.
Google Maps says left.
Google Maps is wrong.
What do I do?
Malcolm made a face in the rearview mirror.
Left, right, all. What do I do?
In the back seat, Olive looked up from the car window and shrugged.
Try right. If it's wrong, we'll just turn around.
She shot An a quick, apologetic glance, but she and Jeremy were too busy mock glaring at each other to notice. Malcolm grimaced.
We'll be late. God, I hate these stupid picnics.
We are, like...
Olive glanced at the car's clock. 1 hour late already. I think we can add 10 minutes to that.
I just hope there's some food left.
Her stomach had been growling for the past 2 hours, and there was no way everyone in the car hadn't noticed. After her argument with Adam 3 days ago, she'd been tempted to just skip the picnic, hole herself up in the lab, and continue with what she had been doing the whole weekend, ignore the fact that she had told him to fuck off, and with very little reason. She could use the time to work on Tom's report, which was proving to be trickier and more time-consuming than she'd initially thought, probably because Olive couldn't forget how much was at stake and kept rerunning analyses and agonizing over every single sentence. But she'd changed her mind last minute, telling herself that she'd promised Adam that they'd put on a show for the department chair. It would be unfair of her to back out after he'd done more than his share of the deal when it came to convincing An. That was, of course, in the very unlikely case that he still wanted anything to do with Olive.
Don't worry, Malcolm, An said. We'll get there eventually. If anyone asks, let's just say that a mountain lion attacked us. God. Why is it so hot? I brought sunblock, by the way. SPF 30 and 50. No one is going anywhere before putting it on.
In the back seat, Olive and Jeremy exchanged a resigned look, well acquainted with An's sunscreen obsession. The picnic was in full swing when they finally arrived, as crowded as most academic events with free food. Olive made a beeline for the tables and waved at Dr. Aslan, who was sitting in the shade of a giant oak with other faculty members. Dr. Aslan waved back, no doubt pleased to know that her authority extended to commandeering her grad's free time on top of the 80 hours a week they already spent in the lab. Olive smiled weakly in a valiant attempt not to look resentful, grabbed a cluster of white grapes, and popped one into her mouth while letting her gaze wander around the fields.
An was right. This September was uncommonly hot. There were people everywhere, sitting on the lawn chairs, lying down in the grass, walking in and out of the barns, all enjoying the weather. A few were eating from plastic plates on folding tables close to the main house, and there were at least three games going on, a version of volleyball with the players standing in a circle, a soccer match, and something that involved a frisbee and over a dozen half-dressed dudes. "What are they even playing?" Olive asked An. She spotted Dr. Rodriguez tackle someone from immunology and looked back to the almost empty tables, cringing. Slim pickings was all that was left. Olive wanted a sandwich, a bag of chips, anything.
"Ultimate frisbee, I think. I don't know. Did you put on sunblock? You're wearing a tank top and shorts, so you really should."
Olive bit into another grape. "You Americans and your fake sports."
"I'm pretty sure there are Canadian tournaments of ultimate frisbee, too. You know what's not fake?"
"What?"
"Melanoma. Put on some sunscreen."
"I will, Mom," Olive smiled. "Can I eat first?"
"Eat what? There's nothing left. Oh, there's some cornbread over there."
"Oh, cool. Pass it over."
"Don't eat the cornbread, guys."
Jeremy's head popped up between Olive and An.
"Just said that a pharmacology first year sneezed all over it.
Where did Malcolm go?"
"Parking."
"Holy shit."
Olive looked up from her perusal of the table, alarmed by the urgency in An's tone.
"What?"
"Just holy shit."
"Yeah, what?"
"Holy shit.
You mentioned that already?"
"Because
holy shit."
She glanced around, trying to figure out what was going on.
"What is...
Oh, there's Malcolm. Maybe he found something to eat?"
"Is that Carlson?"
Olive was already walking toward Malcolm to find something edible and skip the whole sunscreen nonsense altogether. But when she heard Adam's name, she stopped dead in her tracks. Or maybe it wasn't Adam's name, but the way An was saying it.
"What? Where?"
Jeremy pointed at the ultimate frisbee crowd.
"That's him, right? Shirtless?"
"Holy shit,"
An repeated, her vocabulary suddenly pretty limited, given her 20-something years of education.
"Is that a 6-pack?
Jeremy blinked.
"Might even be an 8-pack.
"Are those his real shoulders?" An asked. "Did he have shoulder enhancement surgery?"
"That must be how he used the MacArthur grant," Jeremy said. "I don't think shoulders like that exist in nature." "God, is that Carlson's chest?"
Malcolm leaned his chin over Olive's shoulder.
"Was that thing under his shirt while he was ripping my dissertation proposal a new one? Oh, why didn't you say that he was shredded?"
Olive just stood there, rooted to the ground, arms dangling uselessly at her sides.
"Because I didn't know. Because I had no idea."
Or maybe she had, a bit, from seeing him push that truck the other day, though she'd been trying to suppress that particular mental image.
"Unbelievable."
An pulled Olive's hand toward herself, overturning it to squirt a healthy dose of lotion on her palm.
"Here, put this on your shoulders, and your legs, and your face too. You're probably at high risk for all sorts of skin stuff. Freckles, McFreckleface. Jer, you too."
Olive nodded numbly and began to massage the sunscreen into her arms and thighs. She breathed in the smell of coconut oil, trying hard not to think about Adam and about the fact that he really did look like that. Mostly failing, but hey.
"Are there actual studies?" Jeremy asked.
"Hmm?"
An was pulling her hair up in a bun.
"On the link between freckles and skin cancer."
"I don't know."
"Feels like there would be."
"True. I want to know now."
"Hold on. Is there Wi-Fi here?"
"All. Do you have internet?"
Olive wiped her hands on a napkin that looked mostly unused. "I left my phone in Malcolm's car." She turned her head away from An and Jeremy, who were now studying the screen of Jeremy's iPhone, until she had a good view of the ultimate frisbee group. 14 men and 0 women, It probably had to do with the general excess of testosterone in STEM programs. At least half the players were faculty or postdocs. Adam, of course, and Tom, and Dr. Rodriguez, and several others from pharmacology. All equally shirtless. Though, no, not equal at all. There was really nothing equal about Adam. Olive wasn't like this. She really was not. She could count the number of guys she'd been this viscerally attracted to on one hand. Actually, on one finger. And at the moment, said guy was running toward her because Tom Benton, bless his heart, had just thrown the frisbee way too clumsily, and it was now in a patch of grass approximately 10 feet from Olive. And Adam, shirtless Adam, just happened to be the one closest to where it landed.
Oh, check out this paper. Jeremy sounded excited.
Kalesi et al., 2013. It's a meta-analysis. Cutaneous markers of photo damage and risk of basal cell carcinoma of the skin in cancer epidemiology, biomarkers, and prevention.
Jeremy fist-pumped.
Olive, are you listening to this?
Nope. No, she was not. She was mostly trying to empty her brain, and her eyes, too, of her fake boyfriend and the sudden warm ache in her stomach. She just wished she were elsewhere, that she were temporarily blind and deaf.
Hear this. Solar lentigines had weak but positive associations with basal cell carcinoma, with odd ratios around 1.5. Okay, I don't like this. Jeremy, hold the phone. I'm giving Olive more sunscreen. Here's SPF 50. It's probably what you need.
Olive tore her eyes from Adam's chest, now alarmingly close, and turned around, stepping away from An.
Wait, I already put some on. All? An told her, with that sensible motherly tone she used whenever Olive slipped and confessed that she mostly got her veggie servings from French fries, or that she washed her colors and whites in the same load.
You know the literature.
I do not know the literature, and neither do you. You just know one line from one abstract and...
An grabbed Olive's hand again and poured half a gallon of lotion in it. So much of it that Olive had to use her left palm to prevent it from spilling over, until she was just standing there like an idiot, her hands cupped like a beggar as she half-drowned in goddamn sunscreen.
Here you go, An smiled brightly. Now you can protect yourself from basal cell carcinoma, which, frankly, sounds awful.
Olive would have face-palmed if she'd had the freedom to move her upper limbs.
I hate sunscreen. It's sticky, and it makes me smell like a piña colada, and this is way too much.
Just put on as much as your skin will absorb, especially around the freckled areas. The rest, you can share with someone.
Okay, on then. You take some. You too, Jeremy. You're a ginger, for God's sake.
A redhead with no freckles, though.
He smiled proudly, like he'd created his genotype all on his own.
And already put on a ton. Thanks, babe.
He leaned down for a brief kiss to An's cheek, which almost evolved into a makeout session. Olive tried not to sigh.
Guys, what do I do with this?
Just find someone else. Where did Malcolm go?
Jeremy snorted. Over there, with Jude.
Jude?
An frowned.
Yeah. That neuro fifth year.
The MD PhD? Are they dating or...
Guys! It took Olive all she had not to yell. I have no mobility. Please fix this sunscreen mess you created.
God, all. An rolled her eyes. You're so dramatic sometimes.
Hang on. She waved at someone behind Olive, and when she spoke, her voice was much louder.
Hey, Dr. Carlson! Have you put on sunscreen yet?
In the span of a microsecond, Olive's entire brain burst into flames and then crumbled into a pile of ashes.
Just like that. 100 billion neurons, 1,000 billion glial cells, and who knew how many milliliters of cerebrospinal fluid just ceased to exist.
The rest of her body was not doing very well either. Since Olive could feel all her organs shut down in real time, from the very beginning of her acquaintance with Adam, there had been about 10 instances of Olive wishing to drop dead on the spot, for the earth to open and swallow her whole, for a cataclysm to hit
and spare her from the embarrassment of their interactions. This time, though, it felt as though the end of the world might happen for real.
Don't turn around,
what's left of her central nervous system told her.
Pretend you didn't hear On. Will this into non-existence.
But it was impossible. There was this triangle of sorts, formed by Olive and On in front of her, and Adam probably, surely, standing behind her. It wasn't as if Olive had a choice. Any choice. Especially when Adam, who couldn't possibly imagine the depraved direction of On's thoughts, who couldn't possibly see the bucketful of sunscreen that had taken residence in Olive's hands, said,
No.
Well, shit. Olive spun around, and there he was, sweaty, holding a frisbee in his left hand, and so very, very shirtless.
Perfect, then, An said, sounding so chipper. Olive has way too much, and was wondering what to do with it. She'll put some on you.
No. No, no, no.
I can't, she hissed it on. It would be highly inappropriate.
Why? An blinked at her innocently. I put sunscreen on Jeremy all the time. Look.
She squirted lotion on her hand and haphazardly slapped it across Jeremy's face.
I am putting sunscreen on my boyfriend because I don't want him to get melanoma. Am I inappropriate?
Olive was going to murder her. Olive was going to make her lick every drop of this stupid sunscreen and watch her writhe in pain as she slowly died of oxybenzone poisoning. Later, though. For now, Adam was looking at her, expression completely unreadable, and Olive would have apologized. She would have crawled under the table. She would have at least waved at him. But all she could do was stare. And noticed that even though the last time they'd talked she'd insulted him, he didn't really seem angry. Just thoughtful and a little confused as he looked between Olive's face and the small lake of white goop that now lived in her hands, probably trying to figure out if there was a way to get out of this latest shit show, and then, finally, just giving up on it. He nodded once, minutely, and turned around, the muscles in his back shifting as he threw Dr. Rodriguez the frisbee and yelled,
I'm taking 5.
Which, Olive assumed, meant that they were actually doing this. Of course they damn were, because this was her life, and these were her poor, moronic, harebrained choices.
Hey,
Adam said to her once they were closer. He was looking at her hands, at the way she had to hold them in front of her body like a supplicant. Behind her, An and Jeremy were, no doubt, ogling them.
Hey.
She was wearing flip-flops, and he had sneakers on, and he was always tall, but right now, he towered over her. It put her eyes right in front of his pecs, and
no, nope, not doing that.
Can you turn around? He hesitated for a moment, but then he did, uncharacteristically obedient. Which ended up resolving none of Olive's problems, since his back was in no way less broad or impressive than his chest.
Can you, duck a bit?
Adam bent his head until his shoulders were still abnormally high, but somewhat easier to reach. As she lifted her right hand, some of the lotion dripped to the ground.
Where it belongs,
she thought savagely. And then she was doing it. This thing that she had never thought she would ever, ever do, putting sunscreen on Adam Carlson. It wasn't her first time touching him. Therefore, she shouldn't have been surprised by how hard his muscles were, or that there was no give to his flesh. Olive remembered the way he'd pushed the truck, imagined that he could probably bench press 3 times her weight, and then ordered herself to stop, because that was not an appropriate train of thought. Still, the issue remained that there was nothing between her hand and his skin. He was hot from the sun, his shoulders relaxed and immobile under her touch. Even in public, close as they were, it felt like something intimate was happening. So, her mouth was dry. This might be a good time to mention how sorry I am that we keep getting stuck in these situations.
It's fine.
I really am, though. It's not your fault.
There was an edge in his voice. Are you okay?
Yep.
He nodded, though the movement seemed taut, which had Olive realizing that maybe he was not as relaxed as she'd initially thought. How much do you hate this, on a scale from 1 to correlation equals causation? He surprised her by chuckling, though he still sounded strained.
I don't hate it, and it's not your fault.
Because I know this is the worst possible thing and...
It isn't. Olive.
He turned a bit to look her in the eyes, a mix of amusement and that odd tension.
These things are going to keep on happening.
Right. His fingers brushed softly against her left palm as he stole a bit of her sunscreen for his front, which, all in all, was for the best. She really didn't want to be massaging lotion into his chest in front of 70% of her PhD program, not to mention her boss, since Dr. Aslan was probably watching them like a hawk. Or maybe she wasn't. Olive had no intention of turning around to check. She'd rather live in less than blissful ignorance.
Mostly because you hang out with some really nosy people.
She burst out laughing. I know. Believe me, I'm really regretting befriending On right now. Kind of contemplating assassinating her, to tell the truth. She moved to his shoulder blades. He had a lot of small moles and freckles, and she wondered exactly how inappropriate it would be if she played connect the dots on them with her fingers. She could just imagine the amazing pictures it would reveal. But hey, the long-term benefits of sunscreen have been proven by scientists, and you are pretty pale. Here, duck a bit more so I can get your neck. She walked around him to get to the front part of his shoulders. He was so big. She was going to have to use all this stupid lotion. Might even need to ask On for more. At least the department chair is getting a show, and you look like you're having fun. He glanced pointedly at the way her hand was spreading sunscreen on his collarbone. Olive's cheeks burned. No, I mean, not because I am. I meant, you look like you're having a good time playing frisbee, or whatever. He made a face.
Beats chit-chatting for sure.
She laughed. That makes sense. I bet that's why you're so fit. You played lots of sports growing up because it got you out of talking with people. It also explains why now that you're an adult, your personality is so... Olive stopped short. Adam lifted one eyebrow.
Antagonistic and unapproachable?
Crap. I didn't say that.
You just typed it.
I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. I didn't mean to... She pressed her lips together, flustered. Then she noticed that the corners of his eyes were crinkling. Damn you. She pinched him lightly on the underside of his arm. He yelped and smiled wider, which made her wonder what he would do if she retaliated by writing her name with sunscreen on his chest, just enough for him to only get a tan around it. She tried to imagine his face after taking off his t-shirt, finding the 5 letters printed on his flesh in the reflection of his bathroom mirror, the expression he'd make, whether he'd touch them with his fingertips. Crazy, she told herself. This whole thing, it's driving you crazy. So he's handsome, and you find him attractive. Big deal. Who cares? She wiped her mostly lotion-free hands down the columns of his biceps and took a step back. You're good to go, Dr. Antagonistic. He smelled of fresh sweat, himself, and coconut. Olive wasn't going to get to talk with him again until Wednesday. And why the thought came with an odd pang in her chest, she had no clue.
Thanks. And thank On, I guess.
What do you think she'll have us do next time? He shrugged.
Hold hands.
Feed each other strawberries?
Good one.
Maybe she'll up her game.
Fake wedding?
Fake buy a house together?
Fake sign the mortgage paperwork?
Olive laughed, and the way he looked at her, kind and curious and patient. She must be hallucinating it. Her head was not right. She should have brought a sun hat.
Hey, Olive.
She tore her gaze from Adams and noticed Tom approaching. He too was shirtless and clearly fit, and had a large number of abs that were defined enough to be easily counted. And yet, for some reason, it did absolutely nothing for Olive. "Hi, Tom," she smiled, even though she was a little irritated by the interruption. "Loved your talk the other day."
"It was good, wasn't it? Did Adam tell you about our change of plans?"
She tilted her head. "Change of plans?"
"We've been making great progress on the grant, so we're going to Boston next week to finish setting up stuff on the Harvard side."
"Oh, that's great." She turned to Adam. "How long will you be gone?"
"Just a few days."
His tone was quiet. Olive felt relief that it wasn't going to be longer, for indiscernible reasons.
"Would you be able to send me your report by Saturday, Olive?"
Tom asked.
"Then I'll have the weekend to look it over, and we'll discuss it while I'm still here."
Her brain exploded in a flurry of panic and bright red alert signs, but she managed to keep her smile in place. "Yeah, of course. I'll send it to you on Saturday." Oh, God. Oh, God. She was going to have to work around the clock. She wasn't going to get any sleep this week. She was going to have to bring her laptop to the toilet and write while she peed. "No problem at all," she added, leaning even harder into her lie.
"Perfect."
Tom winked at her, or maybe it just squinted in the sun.
"You going back to play?"
he asked Adam. And when Adam nodded, Tom spun around and headed back into the game. Adam hesitated for just a second longer, then he nodded at Olive and left. She tried hard not to stare at his back as he rejoined his team, which seemed to be overjoyed to have him again. Clearly, sports were another thing Adam Carlson excelled at. Unfairly so. She didn't even have to check to know that Ann and Jeremy, and pretty much everyone else, had been staring at them for the past 5 minutes. She fished a seltzer can out of the nearest cooler, reminding herself that this was exactly what they wanted from this arrangement, and then found a spot under an oak tree next to her friends. All this sunscreen fuss, and now they were sitting in the shade. Go figure. She wasn't even that hungry anymore. A small miracle, courtesy of having to apply sunscreen to her fake boyfriend very publicly.
"So, what's he like?"
Ann asked. She was lying down with her head on Jeremy's lap. Above her, Malcolm was staring at the Frisbee players, probably swooning over how pretty Holden Rodriguez looked in the sun.
"Hmm?"
"Carlson. Oh, actually," Ann smirked. "I meant to say, Adam. You call him Adam, right? Or do you prefer Dr. Carlson? If you guys role-play with schoolgirl uniforms and rulers, I totally want to hear about it."
"On?"
"Yeah. How is Carlson?" Jeremy asked. "I'm assuming he's different with you than with us. Or does he tell you repeatedly that the font for the labels of your X and Y axis is irritatingly small?"
Olive smiled into her knees, because she could totally imagine Adam saying that, could almost hear his voice in her head.
"No, not yet at least." "What's he like then?"
She opened her mouth to answer, thinking it would be easy. Of course, it was everything but.
"He's just, you know."
"We don't," Ann said. "There must be more to him than meets the eye. He's so moody and negative and angry and—"
"He's not,"
Olive interrupted, and then regretted it a little because it wasn't entirely true. "He can be, but he can not be too."
"If you say so."
Ann seemed unconvinced. "How did you even start dating? You never told me."
"Oh."
Olive looked away and let her gaze wander. Adam must have just done something noteworthy, because he and Dr. Rodriguez were exchanging a high five. She noticed Tom staring at her from the field and waved at him with a smile.
We just talked, and then got coffee, and then—"
"How does that even happen?"
Jeremy interrupted, clearly skeptical.
"How does one decide to say yes to a date with Carlson? Before seeing him half naked, anyway."
"You kiss him. You kiss him. And then next thing you know,
He's saving your ass, and he's buying you scones, and calling you a smartass in a weirdly affectionate tone. And even when he's being his moody asshole self, he doesn't seem to be that bad. Or bad at all. And then you tell him to fuck off over the phone and possibly ruin everything. He just asked me out, and I said yes. Though it was obviously a lie. Someone with a Lancet publication and back muscles that defined would never ask someone like Olive out.
So you didn't meet on Tinder?
What? No.
Because that's what people are saying.
I'm not on Tinder.
Is Carlson?
No. Maybe. Yes? Olive massaged her temples. Who's saying that we met on Tinder?
Actually, rumors that they met on Craigslist, Malcolm said distractedly, waving at someone.
She followed his gaze and noticed that he was staring at Holden Rodriguez, who appeared to be smiling and waving back. Olive frowned. Then she parsed what Malcolm had just said. Craigslist? Malcolm shrugged.
Not saying that I believed it.
Who are people, and why are they even talking about us? An reached up to pat Olive on the shoulder. Don't worry. The gossip about you and Carlson died down after Dr. Moss and Sloan had that very public argument about people disposing of blood samples in the ladies' restroom. Well, for the most part. Hey. She sat up and wrapped an arm around Olive, pulling her in for an embrace. She smelled like coconut. Stupid, stupid sunscreen. Chill. I know some people have been weird about this, but Jeremy and Malcolm and I are just happy for you all. An smiled at her reassuringly, and Olive felt herself relax. Mostly that you're finally getting laid. Chapter 8. Hypothesis. On a Likert scale ranging from 1 to 10, Jeremy's timing will be negative 50, with a standard error of the mean of 0.2. Number 37. Salt and vinegar potato chips. Was sold out. It was, frankly, inexplicable. Olive had come in at 8 p.m., and there had been at least one bag left in the break room's vending machine. She distinctly remembered patting the back pocket of her jeans for quarters and the feeling of triumph at finding exactly four. She recalled looking forward to that moment, approximately 2 hours later, by which time she estimated that she'd have completed exactly a third of her work and would thus be able to reward herself with the indisputable best among the snacks that the fourth floor had to offer. Except that the moment had come, and there were no chips left. Which was a problem because Olive had already inserted her precious quarters inside the coin slot, and she was very hungry. She selected number 24, Twix, which was okay, though not her favorite by a long shot, and listened to its dull, disappointing thud as it fell to the bottom shelf. Then she bent to pick it up, staring wistfully at the way the gold wrapper shined in her palm. I wish you were salt and vinegar chips, she whispered at it, a trace of resentment in her voice.
Here.
Ah! She startled and instantly turned around, hands in front of her body and ready to defend, possibly even to attack. But the only person in the break room was Adam, sitting on one of the small couches in the middle, looking at her with a bland, slightly amused expression. She relaxed her pose and clutched her hands to her chest, willing her racing heartbeat to slow down. When did you get here?
5 minutes ago. He regarded her calmly. I was here when you came in.
Why didn't you say something? He tilted his head.
I could ask the same.
She covered her mouth with her hand, trying to recover from the scare. I didn't see you. Why are you sitting in the dark like a creep?
Light's broken, as usual.
Adam lifted his drink, a bottle of Coke that hilariously read, Serafina, and Olive remembered Jess, one of his grads, complaining about how strict Adam was about bringing food and drinks into his lab. He grabbed something from the cushion and held it out to Olive.
Here, you can have the rest of the chips.
Olive narrowed her eyes. You.
Me?
You stole my chips. His mouth curved.
Sorry, you can have what's left.
He peeked into the bag.
I didn't have many, I don't think.
She hesitated and then made her way to the couch. She distrustfully accepted the small bag and took a seat next to him.
Thanks, I guess.
He nodded, taking a sip of his drink. She tried not to stare at his throat as he tipped his head back, averting her eyes to her knees.
Should you be having caffeine at...
Olive glanced at the clock. 10:27 p.m.? Come to think of it, he shouldn't be having caffeine at all, given his baseline shiny personality. And yet, the two of them got coffee together every Wednesday. Olive was nothing but an enabler.
I doubt I'll be sleeping much anyway.
Why?
I need to run a set of last-minute analyses for a grant due on Sunday night.
Oh, she leaned back, finding a more comfortable position. I thought you had minions for that.
As it turns out, asking your grads to pull an all-nighter for you is frowned upon by HR.
What a travesty.
Truly. What about you?
Tom's report, she sighed. I'm supposed to send it to him tomorrow, and there's a section that I just don't... She sighed again. I'm rerunning a few analyses, just to make sure that everything is perfect. But the equipment I'm working with is not exactly...
Have you told Aishagul?
Aishagul, he'd said, naturally. Because Adam was a colleague of Dr. Aslan, not her grad, and it made sense that he'd think of her as Aishagul. It wasn't the first time he'd called her that. It wasn't even the first time Olive had noticed. It was just hard to reconcile, when they were sitting alone and talking quietly, that Adam was faculty, and Olive was very much not. Worlds apart, really. I did, but there's no money to get anything better. She's a great mentor, but... Last year, her husband got sick and she decided to retire early. And sometimes it feels like she's stopped caring. Olive rubbed her temple. She could feel a headache coming up and had a long night ahead of her. Are you going to tell her I told you that?
Of course,
she groaned. Don't.
Might also tell her about the kisses you've been extorting and the fake dating scheme you roped me into. And above all, about the sunscreen.
Oh, God. Olive hid her face in her knees, arms coming up to wrap around her head. God, the sunscreen.
Yeah.
His voice sounded muffled from down here.
Yeah, that was...
Awkward? She offered, sitting back straight with a grimace. Adam was looking elsewhere. She was probably imagining it, the way he was flushing. He cleared his throat.
Among other things.
Yep. It had been other things, too. A lot of things that she was not going to mention, because her other things were sure to not be his other things. His other things were probably terrible and harrowing and invasive, while hers... Is the sunscreen going in the Title IX complaint? His mouth twitched.
Right on the first page. Non-consensual sunblock application.
Oh, come on. I saved you from basal cell carcinoma.
Groped under SPF pretense.
She swatted him with her Twix, and he ducked a bit to avoid her, amused. Hey, you want half of this, since I fully plan to eat what's left of your chips?
Nah.
You sure?
Can't stand chocolate.
Olive stared at him, shaking her head in disbelief. You would, wouldn't you? Hate everything that is delicious and lovely and comforting.
Chocolate's disgusting.
You just want to live in your dark, bitter world, made of black coffee and plain bagels with plain cream cheese, and occasionally salt and vinegar chips.
They are clearly your favorite chips.
Not the point.
And I am flattered that you've memorized my orders.
It does help that they're always the same.
At least I've never ordered something called a unicorn frappuccino.
That was so good. It tasted like the rainbow.
Like sugar and food coloring?
My two favorite things in the universe. Thank you for buying it for me, by the way. It had made for a nice fake dating Wednesday treat this week, even though Olive had been so busy with Tom's report that she hadn't been able to exchange more than a couple of words with Adam, which, she had to admit, had been a little disappointing.
Where's Tom, by the way, while you and I slave our Friday night away?
Out. On a date, I think.
On a date? Does his girlfriend live here?
Tom has lots of girlfriends, in lots of places.
But are any of them fake? She beamed at him and could tell that he was tempted to smile back. Would you like half a dollar then for the chips?
Keep it.
Great, because it's about a third of my monthly salary. She actually managed to make him laugh, and it didn't just transform his face, it changed the entire space they were inhabiting. Olive had to convince her lungs not to stop working, to keep taking in oxygen, and her eyes not to get lost in the little lines at the corners of his eyes, the dimples in the center of his cheeks.
I'm glad to hear that grad students' stipends have not increased since I was one.
Did you used to live on instant ramen and bananas during your PhD too?
I don't like bananas, but I remember having lots of apples.
Apples are expensive, you fiscally irresponsible splurger. She tilted her head and wondered if it was okay to ask the one thing she'd been dying to know. She told herself that it was probably inappropriate, and then went for it anyway. How old are you?
34.
Oh. Wow. She'd thought younger. Or older, maybe. She thought he existed in an ageless dimension. It was so weird to hear a number, to have a year of birth, almost a whole decade before hers. I'm 26. Olive wasn't sure why she offered up the information, since he hadn't asked. It's odd to think that you used to be a student, too.
Is it?
Yep. Were you like this as an undergrad, too?
Like this?
You know. She batted her eyes at him, antagonistic and unapproachable. He glared, but she was starting to not take that too seriously.
I might have been worse, actually.
I bet. There was a brief, comfortable silence as she sat back and began to tackle her bag of chips. It was all she'd ever wanted from a vending machine snack. So, does it get better?
What?
This. She gestured inchoately around herself. Academia. Does it get better after grad school, once you have tenure?
No. God, no.
He looked so horrified by the assumption she had to laugh. Why do you stick around then?
Unclear.
There was a flash of something in his eyes that Olive couldn't quite interpret. But nothing surprising about that. There was a lot about Adam Carlson she didn't know. He was an ass, but with unexpected depths.
There's an element of sunk cost fallacy, probably. Hard to step away when you've invested so much time and energy, but the science makes it worth it. When it works, anyway.
She hummed, considering his words, and remembered the guy in the bathroom. He'd said that academia was a lot of bucks for little bang, and that one needed a good reason to stick around. Olive wondered where he was now, if he'd managed to graduate, if he knew that he'd helped someone make one of the hardest decisions of their life, if he had any idea that there was a girl, somewhere in the world, who thought about their random encounter surprisingly often. Doubtful. I know grad school is supposed to be miserable for everyone, but it's depressing to see tenured faculty here on a Friday night instead of, I don't know, watching Netflix in bed or getting dinner with your girlfriend.
I thought you were my girlfriend.
Olive smiled up at him. Not quite. But since we're on the topic, why exactly don't you have one? Because it's getting harder and harder for me to figure that one out. Except that maybe you just don't want one. Maybe you just want to be on your own, like everything about your behavior suggests. And here I am, annoying the shit out of you. I should just pocket my chips and my candy and go back to my stupid protein samples. But for some reason, you are so comfortable to be around, and I am drawn to you, even though I don't know why.
Do you plan to stay in academia?
He asked.
After you graduate?
Yes. Maybe. No. He smiled, and Olive laughed. Undecided.
Right.
It's just, there are things that I love about it. Being in the lab, doing research, coming up with study ideas, feeling that I'm doing something meaningful. But if I go the academic route, then I'll also need to do a lot of other things that I just... She shook her head.
Other things?
Yeah. The PR stuff, mostly. Write grants and convince people to fund my research. Network, which is a special kind of hell. Public speaking, or even one-on-one situations where I have to impress people. That's the worst, actually. I hate it so much. My head explodes and I freeze and everyone is looking at me, ready to judge me, and my tongue paralyzes and I start wishing that I was dead and then that the world was dead and... She noticed his smile and gave him a rueful look. You get the gist.
There are things you can do about that, if you want. It just takes practice. Making sure your thoughts are organized, stuff like that.
I know, and I tried to do that. I did it before my meeting with Tom, and I still stammered like an idiot when he asked me a simple question. And then you helped me, ordered my thoughts, and saved my ass, without even meaning to. I don't know. Maybe my brain is broken. He shook his head.
You did great during that meeting with Tom, especially considering that you were forced to have your fake boyfriend sit next to you.
She didn't point out that his presence had actually made things better.
Tom certainly seemed impressed, which is no small feat, and if anyone screwed up, it was definitely him. I'm sorry he did that, by the way.
Did what?
Force you to talk about your personal life.
Oh. Olive looked away, toward the blue glow of the vending machine. It's okay. It's been a while. She was surprised to hear herself continue, to feel herself wanting to continue. Since high school, really.
That's young.
There was something about his tone, maybe the evenness, maybe the lack of overt sympathy, that she found reassuring. I was 15. One day my mom and I were there, just, I don't even know, kayaking, thinking about getting a cat, arguing over the way I'd pile stuff on top of the trash can when it was overflowing and I didn't want to take it out. And the next thing I knew, she had her diagnosis. And 3 weeks later, she'd already... She couldn't say it. Her lips, her vocal folds, her heart, they just wouldn't form the words. So she swallowed them. The child welfare system couldn't figure out where to send me until I became of age.
Your dad?
She shook her head. Never in the picture. He's an asshole, according to my mom. She laughed softly. The never takes out the trash gene clearly came from his side of the family. And my grandparents had died when I was a kid, because apparently that's what people around me do. She tried to say it jokingly. She really tried. To not sound bitter. She thought she even succeeded. I was just... alone.
What did you do?
Foster home until 16. Then I emancipated. She shrugged, hoping to brush off the memory. If only they'd caught it earlier, even just by a few months, maybe she'd be here. Maybe surgery and chemo would have actually done something. And I was always good at science stuff, so I thought that the least I could do was... Adam dug into his pockets for a few moments and held out a crumpled paper napkin. Olive stared at it, confused, until she realized that her cheeks had somehow grown wet. Oh. Adam, did you just offer me a used tissue?
Maybe.
He pressed his lips together.
I panicked.
She chuckled wetly, accepting his gross tissue and using it to blow her nose.
They'd kissed twice after all. Why not share a bit of snot? I'm sorry. I'm usually not like this.
Like what?
Weepy, I shouldn't talk about this.
Why?
Because it was hard to explain. The mix of pain and affection that always resurfaced when she talked about her mother. It was the reason she almost never did it, and the reason she hated cancer so much. Not only had it robbed her of the person she loved the most, but it had also turned the happiest memories of her life into something bittersweet. It makes me weepy. He smiled.
Olive, you can't talk about it, and you should let yourself be weepy.
She had a sense that he really meant it, that she could have talked about her mom for however long she liked, and he would have listened intently to every second of it. She wasn't sure she was ready for it, though. So she shrugged, changing the topic. Anyway, now here I am, loving lab work and barely dealing with the rest. Abstracts, conferences, networking, teaching, rejected grants. Olive gestured in Adam's direction. Failed dissertation proposals.
Is your lab mate still giving you a hard time?
Olive waved her hand dismissively. I'm not his favorite person, but it's fine. He'll get over it. She bit into her lip. I'm sorry about the other night. I was rude. You have every right to be mad. Adam shook his head.
It's okay. I understand where you were coming from.
I do get what you're saying about not wanting to form a new generation of crappy millennial scientists.
I don't believe I've ever used the expression crappy millennial scientists.
But, FYI, I still think that you don't need to be that harsh when you give feedback. We get the gist of what you're saying, even if you give criticism more nicely. He looked at her for a long time. Then he nodded, once.
Noted.
Are you going to be less harsh then?
Unlikely.
She sighed. You know, when I have no more friends and everyone hates me because of this fake dating thing, I'll be super lonely. And you are going to have to hang out with me every day. I'll annoy you all the time. Is it really worth being mean to every grad in the program?
Absolutely.
She sighed again, this time with a smile, and let the side of her head rest on his shoulder. It might have been a bit forward, but it felt natural. Maybe because they seemed to have a knack for getting themselves in situations that required PDA of some sort. Maybe because of everything they'd been talking about. Maybe because of the hour of the night. Adam. Well, he didn't act as if he minded. He was just there, quiet, relaxed, warm and solid through the cotton of his black shirt under her temple. It felt like a long time before he broke the silence.
I'm not sorry for asking Greg to revise his proposal. But I am sorry that I created a situation that led him to take it out on you. That, as long as this continues, it might happen again.
Well, I am sorry about the texts I sent, she said again. And you're fine, even if you're antagonistic and unapproachable.
Good to hear.
I should go back to the lab. She sat up, one hand coming to massage the base of her neck. My disastrous blotting is not going to fix itself. Adam blinked, and there was a gleam in his eyes, as if he hadn't thought she'd leave so soon, as if he'd have liked for her to stay.
Why disastrous?
She groaned. It's just... She reached for her phone and tapped on the home button, pulling up a picture of her last Western blot. See? She pointed at the target protein. This, it shouldn't... He nodded, thoughtful.
You're sure the starting sample was good, and the gel?
Yep, not runny or dried out.
It looks like the antibody might be the problem.
She looked up at him. You think so?
Yep. I checked the dilution and the buffer. If not that, it might also be a wonky secondary antibody. Come by my lab if it still doesn't work. You can borrow ours. Same for other pieces of equipment or supplies. If there's anything you need, just ask my lab manager.
Oh, wow. Thank you, she smiled. Now I'm actually a bit sorry that I can't have you on my dissertation committee. Perhaps rumors of your cruelty have been greatly exaggerated.
His mouth twitched. Maybe you just pull out the best in me.
She grinned. Then maybe I should stick around. Just, you know, to save the department from your terrible moods.
He glanced at the picture of the failed Western blot in her hand. Well, it doesn't look like you're going to graduate anytime soon.
She half laughed, half gasped.
Oh my God, did you just... Objectively,
this is the rudest, meanest thing.
She was laughing, holding her stomach as she waved her finger at him. Based on your blotting.
That anyone could ever say to a PhD student, ever.
I think I can find meaner things, if I really put myself to it.
We're done. She wished she weren't smiling. Then maybe he'd take her seriously, instead of just looking at her with that patient, amused expression. Seriously, it was nice while it lasted. She made to stand and leave indignantly, but he grabbed the sleeve of her shirt and gently tugged at it until she was sitting down again, next to him on the narrow couch, maybe even a little closer than before. She continued glaring, but he regarded her blandly, clearly unperturbed.
There's nothing bad about taking more than 5 years to graduate,
he offered in a conciliatory tone. Olive huffed. You just want me to stay around forever until you have the biggest, fattest, strongest Title IX case to ever exist.
That was my plan all along, in fact. The one and only reason I kissed you out of the blue.
Oh, shut up. She ducked her chin into her chest, biting into her lip and hoping he wouldn't notice her grinning like the idiot she was. Hey, can I ask you something? Adam looked at her expectantly, like he seemed to a lot lately, so she continued, her tone softer and quieter. Why are you really doing this?
Doing what?
The fake dating. I understand that you want to look like you're not a flight risk, but why aren't you really dating someone? I mean, you're not that bad.
High praise.
No, come on. What I meant was, based on your fake dating behavior, I'm sure that a lot of women, well, some women, would love to real date you. She bit into her lip again, playing with the hole that was opening up on the knee of her jeans. We're friends. We weren't when we started, but we are now. You can tell me.
Are we?
She nodded. Yes. Yes, we are. Come on. Well, you did just break one of the sacred tenets of academic friendships by mentioning my graduation timeline, but I'll forgive you if you tell me if this is really better for you than, you know, getting a real girlfriend.
It is.
Really?
Yes.
He seemed honest. He was honest. Adam was not a liar. Olive would bet her life on it. Why, though? Do you enjoy the sunscreen-mediated fondling and the opportunity to donate hundreds of your dollars to the campus Starbucks? He smiled faintly. And then he wasn't smiling anymore. Not looking at her either, but somewhere in the direction of the crumpled plastic wrapper that she'd tossed on the table a few minutes ago. He swallowed. She could see his jaw work.
Olive.
He took a deep breath.
You should know that. Oh my God!
They both startled, Olive considerably more so than Adam, and turned toward the entrance. Jeremy stood there, one hand dramatically clutching his sternum.
You guys scared the shit out of me. What are you doing sitting in the dark?
What are you doing here? Olive thought ungraciously. Just chatting, she said, though it didn't seem like a good descriptor of what was going on, and yet she couldn't put her finger on why.
You scared me,
Jeremy repeated once more.
Are you working on your report all?
Yeah. She stole a quick glance at Adam, who was motionless and expressionless next to her. Just taking a quick break. I was about to go back, actually.
Oh, cool. Me too.
Jeremy smiled, pointing in the direction of his lab.
I need to go isolate a bunch of virgin fruit flies before they're not virgins anymore, you know?
He wiggled his eyebrows, and Olive had to force out a small, unconvincing laugh. She usually enjoyed his sense of humor. Usually. Now she just wished. She wasn't sure what she wished.
You coming with all?
No, I'm fine right here, actually. Sure. Reluctantly, she stood. Adam did the same, gathering their wrappers and his empty bottle and sorting them in the recycling bins.
Have a good night, Dr. Carlson,
Jeremy said from the entrance. Adam just nodded at him, a touch curtly. The set of his eyes was, yet again, impossible to decipher. I guess that's it then, she thought. Where the weight in her chest had come from, she had no clue. She was probably just tired, had eaten too much, or not enough. See you, Adam, right? She murmured, before he could head for the entrance and leave the room. Her voice was pitched low enough that Jeremy couldn't possibly have heard her. Maybe Adam hadn't either. Except that he paused for a moment, and then, when he walked past her, she had the impression of knuckles brushing against the back of her hand.
Good night, Olive.
Chapter 9. Hypothesis. The more I mention an attachment in an email, the less likely I will be to actually include said attachment. Saturday, 6:34 p.m. From Olive Smith at Stanford EDU to Tom Benton at Harvard EDU. Subject, regarding report on pancreatic cancer study. Hi, Tom. Here is the report you asked for, with a detailed description of what I have done so far, as well as my thoughts on future directions and the resources I will need to expand. I'm excited to hear your thoughts on my work. Sincerely, Olive. Saturday, 6:35 p.m. From Olive Smith at Stanford EDU to Tom Benton at Harvard EDU. Subject, regarding report on pancreatic cancer study. Hi, Tom. Oops, forgot the attachment. Sincerely, Olive. Today, 3:20 p.m. From Tom Benton at Harvard EDU to Olive Smith at Stanford EDU. Subject, regarding report on pancreatic cancer study. Olive, done reading the report. Do you think you could come over to Adams to chat about it? Maybe tomorrow morning, Tuesday, at 9? Adam and I will be leaving for Boston on Wednesday afternoon. TB. Olive's heart beat faster. Whether at the idea of being in Adam's home or at the thought of getting her answer from Tom, she wasn't sure. She immediately texted Adam. Olive, Tom just invited me to your place to talk about the report I sent him. Would it be okay if I came over? Adam,
of course. When?
Olive, tomorrow at 9 a.m. Will you be home? Adam,
probably. There are no bike lanes to my house. Do you need a ride? I can pick you up.
She thought about it for a few moments and decided that she liked the idea a little too much. Olive, my roommate can drive me, but thanks for offering. Malcolm dropped her off in front of a beautiful Spanish colonial house with stucco walls and arched windows and refused to back out of the driveway until Olive agreed to slide a can of pepper spray in her backpack. She walked over the brick tile path and up to the entrance, marveling at the green of the yard and at the cozy atmosphere of the porch. She was about to ring the doorbell when she heard her name. Adam was behind her, bathed in sweat and clearly just back from his morning run. He was wearing sunglasses, shorts, and a Princeton undergrad mathlete's t-shirt that stuck to his chest. Out of the ensemble, the only non-black items were the AirPods in his ears, peeking through the damp waves of his hair. She felt her cheeks curve into a smile, trying to imagine what he was listening to. Probably Coil or Kraftwerk, The Velvet Underground. A TED Talk on water-efficient landscaping, whale noises. She would have given a huge chunk of her salary in exchange for 5 minutes alone with his phone,
just to mess with his playlist. Add Taylor Swift, Beyonce, maybe some Ariana. Broaden his horizons. She couldn't see his eyes behind the dark lenses, but she didn't need to. His mouth had curved as soon as he'd noticed her, his smile slight, but definitely there.
"You okay?"
he asked. Olive realized that she'd been staring. Yeah, sorry. You? He nodded.
"Did you find the house all right?"
"Yes, I was just about to knock."
"No need."
He passed her and opened the door for her, waiting until she'd stepped inside to close it after them. She caught a whiff of his scent, sweat and soap, and something dark and good, and wondered anew at how familiar it had become to her.
"Tom's probably this way."
Adam's place was light, spacious, and simply furnished. "No taxidermied animals?" she asked under her breath. He was clearly about to flip her off when they found Tom in the kitchen, typing on his laptop. He looked up at her and grinned, which, she hoped, was a good sign.
"Thanks for coming, Olive. I wasn't sure I'd have time to go to campus before leaving. Sit down, please."
Adam disappeared from the room, probably to go shower, and Olive felt her heart pick up. Tom had made his decision. Her destiny was going to be defined by the next few minutes.
"Can you clarify a couple of things for me?"
he asked, turning his laptop toward her and pointing at one of the figures she'd sent.
"To make sure I understand your protocols correctly?"
When Adam came back 20 minutes later, hair damp and wearing one of his 10 million black Henleys that were all a tiny bit different, and yet still managed to fit him in the most irritatingly perfect way, she was just wrapping up an explanation of her RNA analyses. Tom was taking notes on his laptop.
"Whenever you guys are done, I can give you a ride back to campus, Olive,"
Adam offered.
"I need to drive in anyway."
"We're done," Tom said, still typing. "She's all yours."
"Oh." Olive nodded and gingerly stood up. Tom hadn't given her an answer yet. He'd asked lots of interesting, smart questions about her project, but he hadn't told her whether he wanted to work with her next year. Did it mean that the answer was a no, but he'd rather not communicate it to Olive in her boyfriend's home? What if he'd never really thought that her work was worth funding? What if he'd just been faking it because Adam was his friend? Adam had said that Tom wasn't like that, but what if he'd been wrong and now—
"You ready to go?"
Adam asked. She grabbed her backpack, trying to collect herself. She was fine. This was fine. She could cry about this later. "Sure." She rocked once on her heels, giving Tom one last look. Sadly, he seemed taken with his laptop. "Bye, Tom. It was nice to meet you. Have a safe trip home."
"Likewise," he said,
not even glancing at her.
"I had lots of interesting conversations."
"Yeah." It must have been the section on genome-based prognostics, she thought, following Adam out of the room. She'd suspected it was too weak, but she'd been stupid, and she'd sent the report anyway. Stupid, stupid, stupid. She should have beefed it up. The most important thing now was to avoid crying until she was—
"And Olive,"
Tom added. She paused under the doorframe and looked back at him. "Yes?"
"I'll see you next year at Harvard, right?"
His gaze finally slid up to meet hers.
"I have the perfect bench set aside for you."
Her heart detonated. It absolutely exploded with joy in her chest, and Olive felt a violent wave of happiness, pride, and relief all wash over her. It could have easily knocked her to the floor, but by some miracle of biology, she managed to stay upright and smile at Tom. "I can't wait," she said, voice thick with happy tears. "Thank you so much." He gave her a wink and one last smile, kind and encouraging. Olive barely managed to wait until she was outside to fist pump, then jump around a few times, then fist pump again.
"You all done?"
Adam asked. She turned around, remembering that she wasn't alone. His arms were folded on his chest, fingers drumming against his biceps. There was an indulgent expression in his eyes, and she should have been embarrassed, but she just couldn't help it.
Olive threw herself at him and hugged his torso as tight as she could. She closed her eyes when, after a few seconds of hesitation, he wrapped his arms around her.
"Congratulations," he whispered softly against her hair.
Just like that, Olive was on the verge of tears all over again. Once they were in Adam's car, a Prius, to exactly no one's surprise, and driving to campus, she felt so happy she couldn't possibly be quiet. "He'll take me," he said. "He'll take me."
"He'd be an idiot not to."
Adam was smiling softly.
"I knew he would."
"Had he told you?" Her eyes widened. "You knew and you didn't even tell me?"
"He hadn't. We haven't discussed you."
"Oh?" She tilted her head, turning around in the car seat to better look at him. "Why?"
"Unspoken agreement. It might be a conflict of interest."
"Right. Sure, it made sense. Close friend and girlfriend. Fake girlfriend, actually."
"Can I ask you something?"
She nodded.
"There are lots of cancer labs in the U.S. Why did you choose Tom's?"
"Well, I sort of didn't. I emailed several people, two of whom are at UCSF, which is much closer than Boston. But Tom was the only one who answered." She leaned her head against the seat. It occurred to her for the first time that she was going to have to leave her life for an entire year. Her apartment with Malcolm, her nights spent with Ann, Adam even. She immediately pushed the thought away, not ready to entertain it. Why do professors never answer students' emails, by the way?
"Because we get approximately 200 a day, and most of them are iterations of, why do I have a C-?
He was quiet for a moment.
"My advice for the future is to have your advisor reach out instead of doing it yourself."
She nodded and stored away the information. "I'm glad Harvard worked out, though. It's going to be amazing. Tom is such a big name, and the amount of work I can do in his lab is limitless. I'll be running studies 24/7, and if the results are what I think they'll be, I'll be able to publish in high-impact journals and probably get a clinical trial started in just a few years." She felt high on the prospect. "Hey, you and I now have a collaborator in common, on top of being excellent fake dating partners." A thought occurred to her. "What is your and Tom's big grant about anyway?"
"Cell-based models."
"Off-lattice?" He nodded. "Wow, that's cool stuff."
"It's the most interesting project I'm working on for sure. Got the grant at the right moment, too."
"What do you mean?" He was silent for a beat while he switched lanes.
"It's different from my other grants, mostly genetic stuff, which is interesting, don't get me wrong. But after 10 years researching the same exact thing, I was in a rut."
"You mean bored?"
"To death. I briefly considered going into industry."
Olive gasped. Switching from academia to industry was considered the ultimate betrayal.
"Don't worry," Adam smiled. "Tom saved the day. When I told him I wasn't enjoying research anymore, we brainstormed some new directions, found something we were both enthusiastic about, and wrote the grant."
Olive felt a sudden surge of gratitude toward Tom. Not only was he going to rescue her project, but he was the reason Adam was still around, the reason she'd gotten the opportunity to know him. It must be nice to be excited about work again.
"It is. Academia takes a lot from you and gives back very little. It's hard to stick around without a good reason to do so."
She nodded absentmindedly, thinking that the words sounded familiar. Not just the content, but the delivery, too. Not surprising, though. It was exactly what the guy in the bathroom had told her all those years ago. Academia is a lot of bucks for very little bang.